everybody, and welcome to episode 128 of the Ron and Brian podcast. I am Ron, as always, joined by the man who we expect next Tuesday night will be declaring his victory as the next president of the United States of America, Brian. Brian, how are you, sir?
Doing great, Ron. I think this is going to be a special week.
It's a big week for you. You've been pushing the write-in vote hard. I have to imagine the only reason we've seen the amount of early voting that we have is for people requesting a paper ballot to literally write your name in. 75 million votes so far. I have to think you've garnered a significant portion of those.
Well, what you have to understand, Ron, is that about 5-6 months ago, I invested heavily in the logging industry stocks. I figured, let's go for, timber companies, paper mills, whatnot. So all these paper ballots that are being flung through the U.S. Postal Service, being filled out in person, thanks to the early voting, all of it, even if I don't win the popular vote, my wallet will win the financial vote.
That's just some smart thinking right there. That's why you are the brains of this operation.
Well, thank you.
Let's get rolling on and have a drink or two.
Drink of the week.
Na zdrowie.
Salud.
Drink of the week.
Sláinte.
Drink of the week. Drink of the
Sláinte,
week.
Sláinte, Brian. What are you drinking this week?
I'm going with the Virginia, let me hold that up to the light properly, Virginia Beer Company Liquid Escape.
Nice.
It's a tart ale, if you would, coming in at a very modest 4.4 ABV. The IBU is coming in at 17. Using Centennial hops, I would describe it as a tart ale brewed with lemongrass, Australian sea salt, and to disappoint Ron, no lactose.
Damn it. No lactose whatsoever. How is it? You look undecided at the moment.
I would like it. It's a good. It tastes like a lager. I'm not getting a very hoppy flavor here. Okay. I would actually prefer more flavor.
All right, that's fair. I'm two-fisting it tonight, Brian. Of course, I brought a beer.
Usually you have to pay extra for two fists.
Usually that's $900 extra. But tonight, yes. I'm just doing it. A little standard Bell's Two-Hearted Ale IPA, one I've had many times before. Always good.
Respectable. I have a question for you while you're describing that. Why is it that sometimes you pour into a glass, sometimes you drink out of the bottle or can?
If it's a crowler, I'm probably going to put it in a glass. If it's a bottle or if it's a can, I'm going to put it in a glass. If it's a bottle, a lot of times I'll just drink out of the bottle. No particular reason, just how I roll. But my second drink,
Hold up, before that one, are you going to describe your first beer?
It's an IPA. It's a good IPA. Pretty standard. Pretty pedestrian. Pretty middle of the road. What's preferred. The alcohol content? Don't know. But what I'm more excited about is, usually in this cold weather, I will have a cup of coffee and I will throw a shot of Evian espresso tequila in there.
Yes, but because you're bougie.
Tonight, I am mixing it up, and I'm trying something a good friend got me, a shot of Jameson cold brew and a nice hot cup of coffee, even better, served in a Ron and Brian podcast coffee mug. Hold on a second.
Look at that handsome mug. Is that not a handsome mug?
Oh, my God. Have you done a shot of the cold brew in your coffee yet?
No, I haven't even thought about it.
Holy shit. That's good.
Really?
Oh, that's a keeper right there.
Now you're making me want to go get take out my bottle and knock down a shot.
Do it for the Patreon. Get yourself a cup of coffee for the Patreon with a shot of cold brew in it, because we'll have
to. Okay. I can be talked into it.
As we know, if you want to become a patron, go to ronandbrianpodcast.com, click on Become a Patron, join the Patreon. Certain levels, you can get the Ron and Brian podcast mug, you can get hats, you can get hoodies, vinyl tote bags, the whole nine yards. But again, I digress.
Face masks.
Face masks, stickers, magnets. Shot glass.
And if you come in at the diamond level, if you come in at the diamond level on our Patreon, I will slow jam anything that you want.
Have you done Billy's slow jam yet?
I'm awaiting instructions from our diamond level Patreon. I'm happy to do any type of slow jam. Just waiting for him to lead the way and point me in the right direction.
All right. Sounds good. Should we keep things moving along here tonight, friend?
Speed it up, my friend.
Speed it up. All right. Well, let's get to a little racism.
This week in
racism.
Racism.
Racism. Racism.
And way too much racism again this week. We are going to start off in Arizona. The Arizona Coyotes have renounced their rights to Mitchell Miller, their top 2020 draft pick, after learning about his bullying of a black classmate with developmental disabilities 4 years ago. The team parted ways with Miller after criticism for selecting him despite knowing of his 2016 assault conviction. Miller had pled guilty at age 14 to one count of assault and one count of violation of the Ohio Safe Schools Act. He and another teenager were accused of making 14-year-old Isaiah Myers Crothers eat a candy push pop after wiping it in a bathroom urinal, and surveillance video also showed them kicking and punching the boy. Also out in Arizona, in Scottsdale.
Can I ask, what sport was that?
That is hockey. The Arizona Coyotes are hockey team.
That's NHL level?
NHL level, yes.
You're telling me an NHL team signed a kid who at 14...
They didn't sign him. They drafted him, so they had the rights to him, but they have renounced the rights. He never actually signed a contract with the team, but he was drafted by the team.
Okay.
And they were aware of the conviction.
Well, that's... Most hockey players suck.
It only became an issue, obviously, when it hit the media. Right. Again, back out to Arizona in Scottsdale, a real estate agent is out of a job for confronting two black men outside of his condo building. YouTuber Dre Abram recorded his interaction with Paul Ng, who had approached Abram and his friend to see why they were taking pictures outside of his building. Ng is seen on video admitting that he is a racist before referring to his neighborhood as a quote, no N-word zone. Ng was later arrested for disorderly conduct and fired from his job at Rust Lion Southby's real estate agency.
Good.
Shocking. We got Alabama in this week in racism. They will be voting for the third time in the last 20 years to remove racist phrases from their state constitution. The Alabama Constitution was designed around Jim Crow's laws, which allow poll taxes, don't allow interracial marriages, and require schools to be segregated. While these laws have been struck down on the federal level over the years, the hope of people living in the state is to have this language removed entirely. Similar measures, however, were defeated by voters in 2004 and 2012.
Wow. Wow. How do you vote against it? I don't even understand.
I did read in 2004, people that opposed it managed to get people to think that it would cause their school taxes to go up. I did also read this year, someone asked if the Alabama governor was for or against it. And the best that their representative would say is, well, she's not against it, but not exactly for it, apparently. Let's see. A man in a Burger King crown hurled racist slurs at a fellow passenger on a New York-bound JetBlue flight. The flight was on the ground in Kingston, Jamaica, when the fight started after the man accused a female passenger of taking his seat and kneeing him in the stomach. Video of the incident shows the man saying, "I'm part West African. I can say N-word anytime I want," before yelling, "Kick that N-word bitch off of the plane." Kingston police later removed the man from the flight in handcuffs. The man has yet to be identified. And we actually have a couple of stories in Racism Rewind this week.
Racism Rewind.
The first one goes back to 2018, to the early days of the Ron and Brian podcast. This was actually one of the first stories we covered on This Week in Racism, Michael Reynolds, who you may remember, he flew to Nashville for a bachelor party weekend and ended up breaking into the home of a black woman and her four sons that was next to the Airbnb he was staying in. Reynolds, who was an NYPD officer at the time, hurled racial slurs at the family and threatened them with violence. At the time, he was sentenced to 15 days in jail, but was not removed from the force. He ended up resigning earlier this year, just before the official NYPD disciplinary process was to begin, and a federal judge just agreed to a settlement, which will see Reynolds pay $1 million to the family he attacked. And then going back to just last week, we discussed the investigation that was being opened into institutional racism at Virginia Military Institute. This week, J.H. Binford Pay, quite possibly the whitest name ever, he is a retired four-star general who served as VMI's superintendent since 2003. He resigned this week while acknowledging that the state leaders had lost confidence in his leadership. The VMI Board of Visitors also voted this week to remove a statue of Stonewall Jackson from the campus. Earlier this year, a group of black alumni had attempted to get the statue removed, with a number of school officials rejecting the idea, including Pei, who at the time called Jackson both a military genius and a staunch Christian.
Didn't he fight on the losing side of the war?
He was part of the Confederacy, owned slaves, but he was a student at VMI, so that's why they have the statue of him there.
But how is he a military genius if he lost?
You know what? You would have to ask J.H. Binford Pei why he feels that way.
What do you, if you had to guess, what's the J.H. stand for?
Jeremiah Hogwarts Binford Pei.
Okay, I'm going to go with Jerk Off Honky Binford Pei.
You might be closer. Well, we'll have to research that and find out. Okay. And as a an added section of This Week in Racism called Cops Can't Stop Killing Black People, we unfortunately go to Philadelphia this week, where on Monday, Philadelphia police shot and killed 27-year-old Walter Wallace Jr., who was holding a knife while undergoing a mental health crisis. Police had been called to the Wallace home twice previously that same day before the shooting occurred. Wallace's family is not calling for the two officers to be charged with murder, but they are asking the city to equip all officers with tasers and review de-escalation techniques. Body camera footage was released earlier today after it had been viewed by the family. The footage shows officers remove their guns, move around their vehicle, and shoot Wallace. One of the officers can be heard saying, "Shoot him," to the other officer. Each officer fired 7 rounds, but it has not been revealed how many shots hit Wallace. Wallace family attorney Shaka Johnson commented that the footage shows that the officers made no effort to de-escalate the situation. The officers' names have not been released due to the city's concerns that it would threaten their safety, but Police Commissioner Danielle Outlaw has promised a full and complete investigation.
Now, has there been any discussion, and I know you're very closely tied into the Philadelphia community, has there been any discussion as to what those two previous visits that police made to that home that day entailed?
They were all due to his mental health issues he was having.
But were they able to de-escalate those situations?
There hasn't been too much that's come out about the first two, just that it hadn't gotten to the point where he was carrying the knife and in the streets. But for whatever reason, a lot of times, I mean, Philly police do often call in social workers to assist with something like this. This particular case unfortunately ended in tragedy, which has led to protests and looting. Although city seems to be somewhat back to normal this evening,
which is just still looting and rioting. Just a lower level.
Less looting, rioting, and burning than we normally see in Philadelphia.
I watched some of the video that they had on the news this morning of it, and it did seem like this was a perfect opportunity for a taser.
He
was coming at the officers.
Yes.
He was walking towards them. He was carrying a knife, and he was not doing anything to de-escalate the situation. This was a perfect opportunity to tase that man.
And apparently, come to find out that probably about a good third of the Philadelphia police officers do not have tasers.
Yeah.
Apparently they break and they don't get repaired or replaced. So it's just one of those things kind of fell through the cracks, I guess. So hopefully we will get more tasers. I'd like a taser, personally. If anyone out there would like to send me one.
We can go online and purchase you one.
You think? I feel like that's something you shouldn't be able to buy online.
I guarantee you we could go online and buy a taser.
Okay.
I mean, it may not be like police officer or military grade. It might be a lower wattage or whatnot, but I'm sure that they... No?
I need the wattage that's going to make someone piss themselves when I hit them with it.
Okay. I need the wattage that's going to give me an erection.
And what wattage is that exactly? Because I feel...
Military grade.
Military grade,
right to the taint, the titanium taint, right there,
right through the perineum. I get it. All right,
that's it.
Well, let's air some beefs.
Ron and Brian's beef of the week.
Brian, what's grinding your gears this week?
My left knee.
Mm.
My aging left knee. I went to the gym on September 7th.
Okay.
What are we looking at? 7 weeks?
Yeah, a while back.
And, okay. Well, first off, I'm going to take my responsibility. For me, I've got to take my responsibility.
You do.
So I went to the gym 7 weeks ago. I'm a big fan of the elliptical. I like to do 30 minutes on the elliptical, and then I like to do some of the weight machines and whatnot.
Sure, because you want to even it out. You want the cardio, and you want to get swole.
I need to get swole.
Yeah.
I mean, who am I if I'm not swole? Yeah. So the gym had just reopened from the pandemic lockdown. And apparently the elliptical machines were not working quite properly. When I would try to set the program to, do whatever the fuck I needed it to do, was not responding. So it was acting as if I wasn't even on the machine. And I like to track, how many calories I burn on it, how long I'm on it. I like to see these numbers on the screen. Wasn't happening. So instead of going downstairs and getting the attention of an employee and asking said employee if they could help me on this machine, I, not wanting to embarrass myself, decided that I would just go run on a treadmill because I saw people running on the treadmill. So okay. I was just like, walked over to the treadmill, doing the in my head, got on the treadmill. And what I did was 30 minutes on the treadmill. I would run for 5 minutes. I would walk for 5 minutes. Run for 5 minutes. Walk. Another alternating round. 30 minutes has passed by. Ron, I'm going to be honest. My left leg has not been the same since.
Well, how did you run prior to running on the treadmill?
I would say somewhere between 10 and 15 years.
I think that may be part of your problem.
Oh yeah. No. There's a lot of problems going on. So it was starting to feel better about a week and a half ago, to the point where I actually thought to myself, you know what? I think I'm ready to go back to the gym. I think I'm ready to go.
Okay.
And last week, last Thursday, I did something. I don't know what I did. It just fucking aggravated it again because I was limping all over again Thursday night. Made an appointment with a orthopedic doctor yesterday. I went and I've been diagnosed with tendonitis and inflammation of my left knee. I am now taking an anti-inflammatory, which is outrageous considering how inflamed I normally am. And I have to go to physical therapy 2 to 3 times a week for the next month.
Wow.
That's bullshit.
Any concerns that maybe the fleshlight is somehow involved in the injury?
No, not at all. Okay. Different body part. Altogether, all right. Different body part.
Fair enough. I just didn't know how you were using it. Maybe there was some angling that you were doing incorrectly.
You know, now that you mention it, I never did actually read the manual that came with it.
See? That's the problem. You need to make sure you're operating it properly. So
I should not be sticking my leg up in the air so I can get the right angle.
Yeah, you should be putting your own legs behind your own head. I'm just going to throw that out there. But
all right,
go to the physical therapy. Make sure that that takes care of things.
So I will be doing my physical therapy. I am currently taking my meds, and they already told me not to drink while on this anti-inflammatory.
Yeah, that's just big alcohol, not being able to sway the doctors.
Yes. So is my aging left knee.
All right.
Is my beef of the week. Ron, what is bothering you?
This week, as it has so often been in the past, my damn grocery store is my beef.
I love it today.
Because I had to go shopping today, get some items. So they have this this robot that looks like a big, like a literal like 8 foot tall letter I with a couple of eyes on it. They call it Marty. It's supposed to go around the store and find like spills on the ground and everything else. Can't clean the skills. All it is literally supposed to do is find like spills or stuff dropped on the floor, and it then will alert somebody to come, you know, clean it up. And it is supposed to be have these sensors so that it doesn't get in your way, but it just constantly gets in your way. And it constantly got in my way today. Like every other aisle, there was fucking Marty getting in my way. It's a pain in the ass. And then in the other aisles, there are these two women. And this, don't be these people that you run into somebody you know in a grocery aisle, and one of you stands on one side of the aisle with your cart, and the other one stands right next to them with their cart talking, so you just block the entire aisle.
Yeah.
While they look at me dead in my eyes, seeing that I'm trying to go down and get some Crispex.
Well, that's because they know who you are.
They do.
They're trying to slow you down so they could spend more time around your essence.
Just drinking in the whole visage that we have here.
Now, I have a question. How is it that I've never experienced this machine? We already have several people in our group chat right now pointing out that they know this machine. I know other people have similar types of devices in their supermarkets. I not once have come across anything like this.
I don't usually see them at bodegas, you know, the kind of places that you go to. I don't see them at Dollar General. So, you know, those of us that go to a little bit nicer, see it.
Question. Does your Wegmans have a burger area? Do they make burgers?
I would assume so. I haven't physically been to the Wegmans. I've only gotten deliveries there, but you can get everything at Wegmans. Like you can buy your house, you can buy a car, you can get sushi, you can get burgers.
I visited one of my company's satellite offices this week. You know what an office is, right, Ron?
Somewhat familiar with that. Yeah.
Okay. Well, back when you were still working, it was a space that was rented out within a larger building.
I get it.
Where employees of a company.
Move forward with your story then.
Do you want me to describe what an employee is?
I think I get where you're coming from. It hasn't been that long.
So a couple people went out to Wegmans for lunch, and apparently they've got food stations throughout this Wegmans, and one of them was a burger bar where they literally will make burgers and fries.
Yeah. No, I mean, the cafe is top-notch at most Wegmans.
I had no idea.
Got to get your head right.
I don't have a Wegmans to go to.
All right, well, listen, I don't know what to tell you. I just don't know what to tell you. I do want to give, let's get a quick shout out to Billy, who went on Wikipedia, found out that the JH in JH Binford Pay, it stands for James Henry Binford Binny Pay the Third. So that there are two. He's not even a junior, he's a third. So that makes it even whiter. Literally,
James Henry Binford Pay the Third. James Henry Binford Pay. James Henry Binford the Third.
Literally the whitest name ever. In fact, I would challenge someone to find us a whiter name than that.
I would guarantee you that James. Can we put that name back up again? James Winford. James Williford.
James Henry.
James Binford. Henry. James Henry Binford Pay has never manscaped.
No. He has never performed oral sex on his wife.
He has never taken off his socks when getting into bed.
When he eats ribs, he uses a fork and knife to slice the meat off the bone so as to not get the sauce on his fingers.
He calls his wife mother.
Ooh, that's a good one. He has slippers and a robe in every room of the house.
He has a black dog to let people think that he's not racist.
Interesting. I don't know. I think this is just going to go down a path that will get us in trouble.
Fair enough.
Much like the In a World thing got us in trouble a few weeks back. I think we need to focus on what's at hand. And what's at hand, Brian?
It's my fleshlight.
You, my friend. Another 2-0 week in our NFL locks of the week. Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Is it really that unbelievable? If you go back and listen to the audio from last week, I even predicted that both games that I picked were going to go down to a 27-24 score, and I was right.
And nail it, you did. You had Pittsburgh plus one. Pittsburgh won the whole thing 27-24. Saints were favored by 7.5. You're like, I think the Panthers are going to give them a run for their money. Panthers lost, but only by 3, 27-24. So you covered that as well. So.
Thank you. It sounds impressive. It sounds impressive. I went 2-0, but I would also like to remind you that as a group, we went 4-0. The reason we did that was because you brought in two winners. If I remember correctly, you sat there specifically and said that the Seahawks were going to take a fall, laying 3.5 against Arizona Cardinals. Cardinals win the whole game 27-24. And then you looked at the state of Texas and you said nothing good is coming out of there. So we are going to lean on Aaron Rodgers, Buck Rodgers, and Rodgers and Hammerstein. And we're going to say that the Packers will cover the 3.5 point spread. Packers win by 15, 35-20.
Although this was second week in a row, I had a game go to overtime for me to lock it up. So hopefully my luck does not run out in this coming week with my new picks. But Brian, who do you like this week?
Ooh, this week, I'm going out on a limb here. I'm going back to the Packers. I loved them last week against the Texans. I love them again. Vikings are a shit show this year and are only getting 6.5 against Green Bay. Lay the points, Green Bay all the way. Also, L.A. Chargers laying 3 against the Denver Broncos. If there's anybody's worse than the Vikings this year, it's Denver. So my two picks this week, Packers and Chargers, lay the points, get rich.
All right. I like a couple of road favorites this week. Another L.A. team, the Rams, going into Miami. L.A. coming off that strong performance Monday night against Chicago. The Dolphins starting Tua Tequila as their starting quarterback rookie for the first time. I like the Rams giving 3.5 points. And then Tennessee on the road against the Bengals. Tennessee only favored by 5.5. I think that line's way too low. But Tennessee minus 5.5. Bet it hard. Bet it often. Bet the house.
Can we talk about the World Series?
Can we? I've been waiting not all week, but for a couple of days to talk about the World Series, which the LA Dodgers wrapped up with a 3-1 victory against the Tampa Bay Rays in Game 6 on Tuesday night.
Who cares? The big thing about the last game in Game 6 is that the Dodgers had a player just in time who, in the middle of the game, it was announced that he had tested positive for the coronavirus. Instructions were relayed to the stadium from MLB headquarters in Rochester, New York, announcing that the Justin Turner immediately needed to be removed from the game and put into self-quarantine. Word got to the stadium, I believe it was about the 7th inning. Taylor left the field, went off into isolation, And this is where literally it's jaw dropping.
Yeah.
Is that as the team continues to maintain their lead, the player rejoins the team in the dugout wearing a mask. Then during the celebration of the championship, what's his name? Justin Turner?
Justin Turner, yes.
Okay, I knew I was close. Justin Turner is seen on the field with his teammates, not wearing a mask, hugging them, holding the trophy that's being passed around. The level of disregard for the health and safety of the people around him, it's been 3 days and I still cannot get over.
And what is also interesting is that the protocol that Major League Baseball had initially established was, you know, if there was ever a case of an ongoing game where a test came back positive, the game was supposed to be immediately halted. And that obviously did not happen as well.
Game six of a World Series, I understand. I get it.
To a point, yeah.
While it's still inappropriate, it's against their protocols. What I find shocking is the fact that the Dodgers had actually put themselves in a bubble during the last two rounds of the playoffs. So they were not being exposed to other people.
Right.
So how does this guy test positive?
That I don't know.
And I read that security.
That photo when he whipped the mask off, I was like, I mean, hugging people was bad enough. And then he whips off the mask when they take the photo. I'm like, this seems very dangerous to the people around him.
And his manager is a cancer survivor.
Right. I will say this. I think it would have been fine for him to be around the bat boy because, as we know, children don't have the receptors.
This is true. Up to 17 years old, 11 months and 30 days, there are absolutely no receptors. Once the child turns 18 and is now a legal adult, all the receptors come out and blossom. We know that. We know that for a fact.
That's right.
No child has ever gotten the virus. It's impossible.
So big exciting things happening next week, next Tuesday, probably one of the most exciting things in the last few years. That's right. Tuesday night, Ron and Brian will be doing a live election night special. So keep an eye on the Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We will let you know where you can catch that. But we will be around to comfort all of you as we go through what should prove to be a very tumultuous evening.
I will be dressed up.
Will you?
I will be I'm going to wear a shirt and blazer. You're not?
I mean, I might as well. I don't get that many chances to wear a button-down shirt.
Well, you do to all the interviews you're going on. I mean, so it's...
I did have to wear one. I was traveling for work this week, and I got to wear a shirt.
Can we talk about that or no?
We can talk about it if you'd like. Yeah.
Where were you traveling, and why didn't you tell me about it?
No.
Why didn't you tell me about it?
I didn't realize that I hadn't told you about it.
You'd not mentioned one word to me about it.
All right. I went out to State College, Pennsylvania, to take a look at a new hotel we're going to open up out there.
Did you go check out the locker room area, specifically the showers in the hotel in State College? I heard that State College shower rooms have been known to be very entertaining to hang out in.
I did not. I must have missed out on that particular experience.
Did you see anybody, Jerry? Did you visit somebody?
He's in jail. So, Joe Pa has passed away. So it was a very quiet, very quiet town, to say.
But his essence has literally cast a spell over that town. The fact that you would walk the streets, that you would breathe the air of the Sandusky.
I don't know where you're going with this.
I don't know.
But it was.
So what was State College like? Because we know that it's one of the eight Sundays out of the year, eight Saturdays out of the year, it is one of the most populous towns in the entire state.
And people did travel to State College last weekend, apparently, just to be able to watch the game on TV in bars. Bars were apparently charging people $25 a head to come in and watch the Penn State game, only for them to lose to an unranked team with a last-minute two-point conversion. And everyone is basically anticipating that Penn State will get crushed by Ohio State this Saturday.
Okay.
But yeah, you know, a lot of people, I mean, a lot of mask wearing, a lot of social distancing, but just, yeah, not a lot of people around, a lot of businesses closed down. So a little depressing.
But I got a good time. Now, here's the question. Were you compensated for this, or was this volunteering?
I was compensated for this, yes.
Well done. How did it feel?
I mean, again, I think it's important to emphasize that I'm not fully unemployed, but I'm most definitely underemployed. And hopefully that will be rectified come 2021.
But you act unemployed.
I have fallen well into that unemployed malaise.
The one thing I will say this is that you have kept your appearance up.
Thank you.
You've kept your schedule for the haircuts. You know, this is still healthy. There's a glow. Your aura still says, I am me and I am beautiful and love me.
I understand that as far as the podcast goes, like this right here, this face, this is the moneymaker. This is what people
want
to see. This is what people pay extra for the Patreon is, you know, some glossy 8x10s that you get at the gold level. I get it. And it's a burden to be this good looking, but I do it for you and I do it for the people.
Have we thought of doing some headshots?
I think we need to.
So we could do, what do you think about doing some headshots, get some glossy black and whites printed up so we could autograph them and give them away?
I think they would be a hot item on the web store at ronandbrianpodcast.com. Definitely a picture with the mug would be even better. I was told I need a new LinkedIn headshot anyway, so maybe I'll get one for that as well.
Well, I think I don't know if people realize this, but the photo of me that you use in the opening sequence of this show,
right?
That is a selfie I took of myself while sitting in the bowl, sitting on the bowl at work, taking a dump.
And my photo is just, I'm not even sure what was going on with my hair at that day, but it's very, very boxy looking.
It is boxy looking. And I'm also, it looks like you're wearing tweed.
You know, I call that my my 80s sportscaster jacket. Maybe I will break that out for the election night special next week.
Yes, that is something that Cosell would have worn in his later years.
That's exactly why I bought it. It's completely unironic that I wear it because I know how bad it is.
Do you know what I want to get my hands on? Remember those gold blazers that they used to wear on Wide World of
ABC Sports?
ABC Sports
ones? Yeah, the gold monster type.
They were so loud and gross at the same time.
Do you think we should get matching gold jackets with a Ron and Brian podcast patch on the chest?
Oh, I would love that. I'd fucking love that. I would wear it every week.
We'll have to work on that. But yes.
Reporting live, the Ron and Brian podcast. I'm Brian.
And the agony of the fleshlight. So, yeah, Tuesday night, we're thinking probably 9 o'clock, because then you'll start seeing some results start to roll in, especially on the East Coast.
There will be no results at 9 o'clock.
You can't. Well, there'll be, I will say this, there'll be results as far as in-person voting.
But they're not going to announce in-person votes.
They not that to my knowledge, they are.
Really?
Yeah, that's what I've heard. And also, I mean, they do have some states that are able to count votes early. So Delaware, for example, with their electoral vote. Pennsylvania has stated that, unlike previous years, they will announce the mail-in ballot counts hourly versus waiting till the end and announcing a total. You know, we will get numbers. I mean, they can start opening ballots at 7 a.m. on election day and we'll start processing them. So we will see. I mean, there has obviously been, I think they have somewhere between 2 and 3 million mail-in votes in Pennsylvania so far. So they have upped the number of people that will be handling it. You know, obviously they need to open it. They need to check the signature and then process it. Although the Pennsylvania Supreme Court has ruled that they cannot disqualify any mail-in votes if the signature does not exactly match the signature on file for the voting record.
Okay, which makes sense.
They have also stated that any mail-in ballot that comes in after November 3rd, they will hold separately because they are already anticipating a potential Supreme Court challenge for those votes that come in after election day.
Right, right. I literally am expecting the most chaotic election of the century. You know, I want to say of our lifetimes, but it's even more than that. I'm literally like I was explaining to somebody about Bush versus Gore yesterday. I think it was Dom. I was talking and I said, you know, if you go back to Bush versus Gore and the chaos that was one state that had not put their ballots that were not counting their votes yet. Now multiply that by 50. And that is what next week is going to be like. I literally am going, you know, now that we think about it, I'm going to place an order for water-based lube now so that I'm not going to run out next week due to my overloaded level of anxiety that I will need to distract myself from by overuse of sexual toys.
So what is interesting, you mentioned Bush-Gore from 2000. So this week, the Supreme Court rejected a request to extend Wisconsin's deadline for counting mail-in ballots. And the individual that wrote the decision on that, of course, conservative Justice Brett Kavanaugh, who, as we all know, likes himself a beer or two. But he...
You can't... No. You can't make a Brett Kavanaugh reference that he likes beer and not play the I Like Beer audio track.
You mean this one?
I mean, I liked beer.
There you go. Come on. I knew you had it lined up.
Conservative Justice Brett Kavanaugh.
I liked beer.
Wrote the judgment denying it. But what was interesting is now he doesn't want the state of Wisconsin to count ballots after the mail-in deadline. However, back in 2000, he was part of the Bush legal team in Florida that emphasized counting every vote that came in after Election Day.
This is what it boils down to. And this is my observation, and I think it's kind of well established, is that the Republicans and the Democrats are they're fighting two different battles with two different tactics. The Republicans want to win, and they will do whatever it takes for them to win. If it means flip-flopping, if it means saying A on Monday and B on Tuesday, if it means sitting there saying we want fewer people to vote, if it means we are going to be literalists when applying the law, if it means no, we are going to extrapolate what the original intent of the founding fathers were. Whatever it takes, they understand as a party what is beneficial to them, and they will realign their stance on every issue so that they get the victory and they are pushing for the same thing. The Democrats are not bloodthirsty. They want to be seen as the taking the moral high ground. They want to be seen as playing fair, doing the right thing, which is why for the past 40 years, they have gotten trounced at a national level.
Right.
It's absolutely true. If you think about it, I saw on Twitter earlier this week, and we know it had to be true, five of the nine justices on the Supreme Court were put up by presidents who lost the popular vote.
That is correct.
That is not representation in any way. And I know the comeback is this government has never been representative of the people. From the founding fathers, from the Constitution, it was literally landowning white males are allowed to vote. And if you are not a landowning white male, you did not have a vote. You are not represented in this government. So the fact that we now are clinging to this concept of one person, one vote, we're a democracy is horseshit. It's never been real. But the whole thing is fucked.
Well, it's sad that rather than, run candidates that people in the country can get behind, rather than come up with policies that benefit the average person, rather than provide stimulus packages that help the average American, tax breaks that help the average American, they would rather spend their efforts suppressing the vote in order to win.
Think about it. If you've got a party whose winning strategy is to suppress the vote, that tells you everything about where they stand in terms of the numbers. Yeah. If they feel that the fewer people vote, the better for them, then you understand that they're not representing a majority of the people.
Now,
don't listen to me. I believe we need to have a third party.
Third party. We need to have as many political parties as is necessary to actually get competent people into politics.
Right. The biggest issue is that
it's you have two choices for the most part.
And they're both the same. Right. The fact that somebody as a visionary, somebody who literally is a messiah, somebody like a Tulsi Gabbard, the fact that this woman right now needs to be a write-in and not automatically just a go-ahead for the next president just shows you where we are as a society.
All right.
One little tuft of blonde hair.
You're going to get all excited if you start talking about your girl Tulsi. But staying in Wisconsin for a moment,
do we have to?
Well, just
it's a shit state.
This kind of
crack. I've never been there. I don't know if it's a shit
state. So the Wisconsin state GOP officials announced this week that hackers stole $2.3 million from a Wisconsin campaign account for President Trump's reelection bid.
How?
Apparently, they sent someone one of those phishing emails, and right. There must have been someone in the Wisconsin GOP who wanted to find hot single women that were right by him, and they were able to access the system. They then changed invoices from four vendors contracted for direct mail services with the payments going to the hackers instead of the vendors, and managed to steal $2.3 million before anyone realized what was going. So that has been turned over to the FBI. We'll see what happens.
If Biden wins, that case is just kind of whiffing away and going nowhere.
What else we got? Brian, real important question this week. Very, very important question. What are you watching?
I watched Borat.
Did you? And what
is glorious... I want to talk positive about it because okay. I was such a fan of the first Borat movie. I am such a fan of what of the Ali G show. Right. I'm a fan of what Sacha Baron Cohen does. I find it brilliant. I find it cerebral. The show What Is America that he had on HBO 2 years ago. Just high point. Just loved it. This movie misses the mark in just about every way. Mm. I laughed. I chuckled. It was better than a lot of other things that I could have watched right now. At the end of the day, I don't necessarily feel that the world needed a second Borat movie. I mean, the plot is basically Borat realizes that he has a daughter in Kazakhstan and brings her to America so that he can offer her to Mike Pence as a show of goodwill so that Kazakhstan is rewarded by the Trump administration. Just a flimsy, flimsy plot.
Right. I attempted to watch it. I think I got through about 15 minutes of it. I got to the portion where he was faxing a message back to his home country, and I was like,
right,
I can't do it anymore. And you know what? And I read a review of the movie, and I think it kind of nails my issue with even the first movie, which I didn't watch, is that, you know, Sacha Baron Cohen, when he does skits like Borat and things like that, they are very good as individual pieces. You know, if you look right at like Ali G and This Is America, like the individual pieces are great. When he comes up with a lot of different individual bits and then you force a movie storyline to piece everything together, that's what ruins it. If you just did like a Jackass style movie where you did a bit, you just jump to another bit, you jump to another bit, and you don't necessarily need to have everything connected, it probably would work a lot better.
I agree with you 101%. If you go back to the first Borat movie, there was absolutely no need for Pam Anderson to be involved in that movie.
Right.
It was a feeble attempt to tie all of these different bits to why is Borat going from New York to California? It couldn't have just been like, I am traveling America. I want to see who are America. Like, no. It had to be like he falls in love and he's watching Baywatch and masturbating to photos of her. And it felt forced and it felt disingenuous, especially when you're comparing it to something as hyper real as the interviews that he's doing,
right,
where he's saying outrageous, outlandish, racist, sexist things, trying to get people to lower their guard, giving them an opportunity to behave properly and point out the ignorance of his behavior. And what he catches people doing is realizing that because they're sitting with somebody who has these thoughts, they're more comfortable expressing their own racist and sexist thoughts.
Well, it's what happens when people stop being nice and start being real. A little true world.
You son of a bitch. You did real not make an MTV real world reference. Did you ever watch The Real World?
I probably watched the first two seasons because everybody did. And then it just got... I remember Puck and Pedro. Like, I definitely watched that season. And then I think I just... and I
that
might
was
have
the first episode, year, wasn't it? Or
yeah,
no?
I think I caught an episode or two when they were in Philadelphia. But yeah, just after that. Were you the one who last week told me you were watching Ted Lasso on Apple TV?
I watched one episode.
Did you? What did you think?
It was okay. It was something to watch. I found myself getting distracted and picking up my phone. I'm not going to lie. Did it look like it had potential? Yeah, sure.
I would recommend to you, give it another episode or two, because I felt the same way after the first episode. I was like, I think I'm on episode 7 or 8 now.
You don't have to brag.
It's a funnier show than the previews or the first episode would give. It's got a lot more heart to it. Like, it is, a lot of the characters are very well thought out. The storyline is very well thought out. Like, it is one of the better comedies, one of the better half hour comedies that I've seen in the last few years. And I was completely shocked by the time I watched episode 3, I was like, this is actually a very good show. So I would encourage you.
I'll go back into it. I also want to watch Mandalorian 2. The new season's out.
That's coming up. I also watched, there's more episodes of Unsolved Mysteries that came out. I watched the first couple. The first one was interesting. The second one, not so much. Seems very hit or miss. And I know
Did you say Unsolved Mysteries?
Unsolved Mysteries.
Is this the same series with like Rex Harrison where he's...
Robert Stack.
Wasn't he in Airplane?
He was, yes.
Wasn't he?
But he's no longer alive, so he's not. He's not part of the new show. But they actually, like 6 months ago, came out with new episodes on Netflix of Unsolved Mysteries, and then just last week dropped additional new episodes.
So these are updated stories,
brand new stories.
What are the episodes you watched? What were they? Are they all murderers or?
Pretty much, yeah. There was one. I think there was an alien one in there as well. Again, some I find the episodes very hit or miss. Like of the two new episodes, the first new episode was about this guy that was found dead in a landfill, and you see all the security camera footage of him in the night leading up to his disappearance, and it is very mysterious, very well done. And the one after that is a woman who was found dead of a suicide, but people think she was killed in her hotel room, but no one really knows who she is. That one was kind of boring.
Okay.
But what I would love to talk about, speaking of Halloween and kind of unsolved mysteries, is it reminded me of a story of when I was growing up as a young boy in upstate New York. And Brian,
I love when you tell boyhood stories. I love when we peel the layers of the Ron onion.
And this story, I don't know, it was before the internet, but I would think it would have been a big enough story that you might have heard of down in New York City. Are you familiar with who Mary Beth Tinning is?
No.
All right. So let me preface this by asking you a question. How many of a woman's children need to die before you feel police should maybe investigate and see what's going on?
Can you play the Jeopardy music?
If I had it, I would, but it might get our show taken off the air.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm going to go with one.
So Mary Beth Tinning in 1987, after her ninth child died.
No, come on. That can't be true.
I was investigated and eventually convicted for the death of her ninth child. But all nine of her children had died up to that point. They did exhume the bodies of her other children and were never able to really put together a case as to whether she had killed them or not. I mean, she had one that they know she didn't kill, her very first child, on December 26, 1971.
In a world where a woman loses nine children before the cops suspect that there may be foul play at hand.
So in December 71, Mary Beth Tinning gives birth to her third child, Jennifer. Jennifer had meningitis, multiple brain abscesses, lived only for a week and never left the hospital, died January 3rd, 1972.
She also had an ass that would not quit.
So that one, since she never left the hospital, that one they were pretty sure she didn't kill. But 2 weeks after Jennifer's death, Mary Beth Tinning took two-year-old Joseph Jr. To an emergency room, saying that he had experienced a seizure and had choked on his own vomit. Joseph Jr. stayed in the hospital for several days under observation before being released. Doctors didn't find anything wrong with him. About 3 weeks later, on January 20th, only a few hours after his release, Mary Beth Tinning brings Joseph Jr. back to the emergency room. Boy was dead on arrival. Death was attributed to cardiopulmonary arrest. So then several weeks later. So
two down. Joseph Jr.
One kid dies January 3rd. Second kid dies January 20th. Now, fast forward to March 1st. Mary Beth Tinning rushes her daughter Barbara to the same emergency room because she had gone into convulsions. The next day, Barbara died after being in a comatose state for several hours. Her death was attributed to Ray syndrome.
Ray syndrome. Like this week in Ray syndrome?
Exactly. So now we're at March of 72.
That was now, four, right?
That's three kids down so far.
Three, okay.
Now we go ahead to Thanksgiving Day, 1973. Mary Beth Tinning gives birth to son Timothy. A few weeks later, on December 10th, Timothy was brought back to the same hospital he was born in, dead. Tinning telling doctors she found him lifeless in his crib. Doctors attributed to his death to sudden infant death syndrome. In March 1975, we're jumping ahead a couple of years now, Mary Beth Tinning, fifth child Nathan is born in the autumn. He died in the car while out with Mary Beth Tinning.
Is there any way we could do like a Brady Bunch square? And as you announce the next kid, we just put an X in front of them.
So now we're at autumn of 1975. We've got five kids. Now in August,
this is upstate New York in the 70s.
This is Schenectady.
Is this right by your neck of the woods?
Yes.
Same hospital each time.
There's two hospitals in Schenectady. It was either Ellis or St. Clair's that she would go to.
Is she going to the same one or different ones? Is she bouncing back?
Sometimes to Ellis. Like St. Clair's had an emergency room. Ellis was where she would go back to at times. So now we're moving ahead 3 years to August 1978.
Like a punch card where the 10th kid you get free?
I don't know. So now in August 1978, the Tinnings adopt a newborn baby. So they've had.
I don't like this kid's chances.
And they are allowed to adopt newborn Michael. So they adopt in August of 1978. On October 29th, Mary Beth gave birth to her sixth child, Mary Frances. So August, you adopt a kid while you're pregnant and also give birth in October. So Mary Frances is born in October. And then in January, Mary Beth Tinning rushed Mary Frances to the emergency room. So the baby was having a seizure. The staff was able to revive Mary Frances.
Against all odds.
Saying it was another case of SIDS. But then a month later, Tinning brings Mary Frances back in full cardiac arrest. They managed to revive her once again, but with irreversible brain damage. She died 2 days later after being taken off life support. The Tinning's eighth child, Jonathan, was born in the fall of 79. He died in March 1980 after being kept on life support for 4 weeks. Not a lot of detail as to what happened there. February 1981, you remember the baby they adopted back in 78, Michael?
Yeah.
Yeah, he fell down the stairs and suffered a concussion. On March 2nd, Mary Beth takes him to the doctor because he wouldn't wake up. Michael was already dead when he brought him into the doctor's office.
Now, you are leaving out one other child.
Well, now we
are. She had a 10th child. His name was Scott. And he was whisked away by a family friend when Mary Kay was not looking, whisked away to Saratoga Springs, where he stayed with a family friend raised under the auspice of the Price Chopper Corporation to be a company man.
So anyway, now we're August 22nd, 1985.
Oh, fucking hell, Ron. Tell me, there's more?
The ninth child, Tammy Lynn, is born to the Tinning family. August
Tammy 24th. Lynn?
On December 20th, she died from being smothered. So that day, Schenectady County says, maybe we should get somebody from our Department of Social Services to go out and someone from the police department to go out and investigate this. So they investigate it. They interrogate Mary Beth and her husband, Joe, separately. And she eventually signs a document confessing that she had murdered Tammy Lynn, Timothy, and Nathan. However, she was only arrested and charged with Tammy Lynn's murder.
How is this not an Unsolved Mysteries? How is this not a Netflix documentary? Ron,
buy the rights now. I have no
idea. Use your 51%, that extra penny from Patreon, and buy the rights.
So she was sentenced, received a sentence of 20 years to life, shockingly, in August of 2018. At the age of 76, she was granted parole.
Because her uterus was barren at this point.
And her husband stood by her. She is still married to Joseph. He was there for her upon her release. She will remain under parole supervision for the rest of her life. She lives somewhere in Schenectady County, has a curfew on a daily basis, and must attend domestic violence counseling.
Can we get her on the podcast?
We can definitely reach out to her and
can
find
we see
out.
Can we see if Matt Beaker can reach out to her and see if she wants to come on?
So while
I imagine she's got just an incredible internet connection. I feel like a woman who's killed 9 of her children has got a T1 connection at home.
So while she has never had a full documentary, she has been featured on the ID Channel's Most Evil Murderous Women episode, and has also been on ID Channel's Deadly Women episode.
I can see that.
But I do remember, you know, because I was, 15, 16, and 87, somewhere in that. I was in high school. We were, and just
Let me guess. Your chest was hairless at the time?
I had a mullet going. I mean, maybe a rat tail. I wasn't sure. But I do remember so everyone odd. Being like, how is it this is the 9th child that this woman has had to die, and we are just hearing about this?
This is unbelievable. I had never heard of this.
And listen, I have said this before, and I will say it again, is what we need to do in this country is we need to get rid of rural America. Because that is where all of the twisted shit happens. Not the gentrified rural America. Like the Beekman boys can keep making, you know, goat milk soap, and Chip and Joanna Gaines can keep cranking out cheap crap for Target and flipping whatever homes in Waco the government didn't burn down. But, you know, the real backwoods, you know,
towns like York, Pennsylvania.
Right.
Like York, Pennsylvania.
Use bacon fat.
People with alligators.
Stove. I want to introduce you to my wife and cousin. They're the same person. That type rural. Like, we need to get rid of that.
I just saw Billy's comment. Billy's comment is good.
And yes, so we'll probably talk pro wrestling and After Dark. But yes, 9 dead children is even in higher death count than the Von Erich family.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That was a rough episode for Dark Side of the Ring for Vice, which has been renewed for a third season.
I will watch it again. Ron, are you ready to answer the internet?
All right, bring it to me, internet.
All right. This one, we are going to Reddit, which is America's favorite website, where one of the subreddits is relationship advice.
All right.
So I'm going to read to you one of the questions that was asked this past week, and I want your take on what your answer would be if this person posted a question to you.
All right. Hit me up with it.
All right. Hold on. Let me just wet my beak.
Wet your whistle a little bit.
I adopted my second son, Kay, 2 years after I gave birth to my biological son, Q. It's a long and irrelevant story, but I raised him as my own, and I love him just as much. Kay is a different race to Q, so there's never been any question that they're not biologically related, but for their entire childhood and adolescence, they've been as close as if they really were. They have always dated girls, and I've always assumed both boys were straight. Kay and Q are currently attending the same university, albeit studying different degrees. Since COVID, they've been staying together in their own small apartment while at college. Recently, they came to sit me down. I am a widow. My husband died 7 years ago, and told me during lockdown that they entered into a sexual relationship and wanted my blessing. Taken aback is an understatement. I was shocked beyond words. My first reaction was to blurt out incest. They, of course, rationalized it by saying that they're not biologically related, which, of course, is a true, valid point, but it still feels so wrong. I have no issue with the homosexual aspect of their relationship.
Of course.
If they had sat me down to tell me that they were both gay, I'd have accepted it without question. But the idea of them having a sexual relationship after being raised as legal brothers is just bizarre to me, and I have no idea what to do or how to feel. After they told me, I told them I needed to go to my room as I felt faint. You know this is a white woman.
Yeah.
They left shortly afterwards and said they'd come to see me another time. What do I do, Ron? I love my boys and I want to support them, but this just feels too wrong.
So this is Kay and Q, you're saying?
Kay and Q. Kay, adopted. Q, biological.
Now, did they give any more details? Was it a situation of like where Kay was doing laundry one day and got stuck in the dryer and looked back and said, Q, stepbrother, what are you doing? Like something along those lines or any type of detail like that?
Details, anything further than what I read to you, not provided.
So what's the question again?
What do I do?
I think you you let them live their lives. While it's obviously unusual, the fact that they are, you know, adopted, you know, one's adopted, but they are not blood. So while, you know, again, a little unusual, but Brian, the heart wants what the heart wants.
Well, is this a matter of what the heart wants or is this a matter of what the little heads are demanding?
I mean, listen, you have to assume that, you know, these are adults if they're on a college level and they can make decisions for themselves.
We know based on the COVID rates at universities across this country that college students are not making good decisions about
their lives. And as a mother or a father, like I would look at this also from, you know, some pluses, like you don't have to worry about like approving, you know, of a partner because you already know both of them. If both of them end up with each other, you know, that really lowers the number of gifts you need to purchase for birthdays and Christmas versus if they bring other people into the family. So, I mean, there's some side benefits to this that I don't think she's really thinking through.
Ron, there is only one answer here.
Yeah.
Love is love is love is love.
One love, Brian. One love. So let's get excited about next week, Brian.
Let's get excited about next week.
You can check out Ron and Brian. We will have our election night special. Keep an eye on our Facebook, Twitter, and or Instagram to find out more information.
But we're also doing our weekly Thursday show.
We are also still doing our Thursday night show. Next week, we will have a very special lightning round. And we will also have a special guest. We haven't had an interview on in a few weeks. But we will be bringing on Alex Kack, who you might know better as the green shirt guy. So he will be on to talk politics and the state of our nation. So that is very exciting for next week. And we will also next Thursday still be doing our After Dark. Although tonight's After Dark is extra special. It's a pajama party. We're bringing our Patreon subscribers in. You all have the link to join us on the StreamYard in just about 20-some minutes. So for those of you who aren't Patreon subscribers, as always, head to ronandbrianpodcast.com. Those bastards, Ron Howard and Brian Glazer, own ronandbrian.com. So go to ronandbrianpodcast.com, upper right corner, click on Become a Patron, and you too can join the weekly Ron and Brian After Dark.
And it is the thanks to our subscribers, to the people, the Patreons, the patrons, however you want to describe yourselves. You are the angels here. You are the ones that are making this possible. Ron puts a lot of the research in. Ron is master control. Ron is 51%. I show up, throw in an inappropriate joke every now and then, drink a couple beers. I'm 49%. But ultimately, you, the Patreon subscribers, you are the ones that fuel this machine. And I want to thank you. If you're not a subscriber yet, join. Throw us a couple bucks a month. Don't steal the show.
And if you have not sent in your ballot yet, make a plan. It is too late to mail in a ballot in most states that you are in. So if you are doing an absentee ballot or a mail-in ballot, make sure you use a ballot drop box. If you can't, you can get a provisional ballot at most states at your voting place. But just get out and vote. This is, I think, hands down, the most important election of our lifetime. No hyperbole in saying that.
No.
Would you
not
agree?
At all. I would agree with that.
All right.
Do we have anything else or are we done?
We're going to get out of here. We're going to get ready for the Pajama Jammy Jam, Jerry.
Yeah, boy.
All right. Thanks for joining us. We will see you next week. Patreon subscribers, we'll see you in a few minutes.